Now, what if I told you there's one button that can add years to your life, make you feel more energized, and make unexplained health problems vanish? It's called Aeroplane Mode. Electromagnetic fields, or EMFs, are beamed at us daily from our smartphones, Wi-Fi, and Bluetooth headphones.
These signals are all around us, they're ubiquitous, and yet we rarely talk about the potential health implications.
Old research says that we shouldn't be worried, that non-ionizing radiation is safe, but current research links this type of radiation to cancer, infertility, insomnia, depression, and a hell of a lot more.
It is circadian disrupting. It is hormone disrupting. When you talk with a phone on the ear, there are links with parotid gland cancers, glioblastomas. We have a crisis worldwide in the Western nations. It is something that is threatening to the species long term.
This is not a tinfoil hat conspiracy theory, as you're about to find out.
When they start reducing exposure, they might just discover that their health is completely transformed.
The EMF guy, Nick Pino, is here to help us avoid EMFs without going back to the Stone Age. Welcome to the Health Optimization Podcast. I'm Tim Gray, the UK's leading biohacker. This podcast is all about gaining actionable advice from the world's top experts and sharing new breakthroughs in nature, biohacking, technology, and longevity research to help you live longer and happier. Everything I cover on this podcast are the things I've learned from the world's top medical professionals, researchers, scientists, and authors in the health field. However, I'm none of those things. I'm just someone with a very keen mind for figuring out how to be as healthy as possible while aging gracefully and learning from the best. My only bias is health. EMF radiation is bloody everywhere. Even if you're careful personally, EMFs are being blasted at us no matter where we go. So how do we actually avoid them? That's what you're just about to find out. For years, biased, industry-funded research said that EMFs aren't a problem, and anyone who questioned this was seen as a conspiracy theorist. The theory is ionizing radiation, the stuff that you get from X-rays, is bad for your health, but non-ionizing radiation, which your smartphone and Wi-Fi gives us, is fine. That's old news. The science is catching up, and it's not good. But there's a lot of misinformation out there. That's why Nick Pino wrote the number one bestseller, The Non-Tinfoil Guide to EMFs. It's the best book about EMFs you'll ever read, full of up-to-date, independent scientific evidence about the dangers of EMFs and how to avoid them. Nick Pino, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Tim. It's a pleasure.
It's been a long time coming, so I'm super happy to be spending some face time with you and going through all of the stuff that we've talked about off screen. So this is going to be a fun one, I think. So for those of the listening, what are EMFs for anyone that's completely new to all of this?
Sure. Well, we're really talking in the scope of my work about man-made EMFs, because EMF is not one thing. It's an entire spectrum of different frequencies that some of them are natural, such as the Earth's natural magnetism in the very low frequency range. So you would have the Schumann resonance that starts around 7.83 hertz and then a few resonant frequencies. And we also have different frequencies that we've always been exposed to from nature, such as visible light and sunshine, you know, and many of these frequencies are visible. Many are also invisible, such as a part of the UV or part of the infrared spectrum. And then we also know that certain even natural exposures to nuclear particles, for example, would be in the extremely high frequencies. And we know that there are some detriments to that. But in the scope of my work, I'm really interested in uncovering what are the health implications of introducing new types of EMFs at frequencies and at intensities that have never been experienced in human history in the form, for example, of radio frequency radiation. That's one that is fast increasing. And I'm talking about this, the radiation that is a low-level non-ionizing signal that goes from your phone to a cell tower or from your Bluetooth headphones to your phone. Or Wi-Fi is another example of radio frequency. So nowadays, these signals are all around us. They're ubiquitous. And yet, we rarely talk about the potential health implications.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I believe it's called native EMFs and non-native EMFs. Native, sure, being natural, non-native being, you know, human, man-made, right?
For sure. Yeah, you can talk about it that way. And it's really important to make the distinction, because a lot of people online that I see being skeptical about the potential health risks of cell phones or Wi-Fi and Bluetooth tell me things like, well, we've always been exposed to sunshine, so how come a cell phone could hurt us? And it's, to me, it's saying, you know, we've always been exposed to food, so how come junk food can hurt us, right? It makes no sense, because we're really talking about two different animals. The natural EMFs have certain signal properties that are, you know, that have been found in nature, such as the fact that all natural EMFs are emitted in all directions. They're not emitted in a specific direction. Part of it is called polarization. And what we've done with antennas and cell phones is that now these EMFs that are non-native, that are man-made, are emitted in a specific direction and also are pulsed and have different signal characteristics that make it essentially completely different when it comes to biological effects compared to the native signals.
It's like saying, comparing LED light to sunlight, isn't it? I mean, one,
sure,
like completely different light spectrum, like, and completely different flicker rate, or should I say non-flicker versus flicker. And
correct,
saying, well, actually, the sun is fine for us, therefore LEDs should be fine for us. But we know very well in science that, you know, light affects us, our hormones, how we grow, and how we wake and sleep. So to say this is the same as that just seems absolutely crazy when we know this in other areas, but not. So I guess my point is, one of my most popular reels of all time on Instagram actually was about how using Bluetooth headphones or keeping your Wi-Fi router on at night or charging your phone on your bedside table, you know, there was between them, I think there was 12 to 15 million views. And I had so many people saying, well, EMFs are all around us, they're natural, so they shouldn't harm us. And like they spout this stuff off like they're experts. And yet when an expert like you, and I think we engaged on it, didn't we, actually, on this one of these posts, it was like when an expert comes in that's written books on the topic and spends his life going into it, some layman, some beginner on Instagram that's probably read something on Wikipedia or YouTube thinks he knows better, which I just find quite annoying. But I think that's why it's so good to be unpacking this further with you today. And obviously I'll be commenting on that reel to get everyone across it.
Yeah. And that's true that, you know, in the end, I'm often challenged about the research that I'm doing because of the prevailing, knowledge around the area of EMS is completely wrong. And that's what I'd say 99%, I don't have the stats, but 99% of people I engage with online that are skeptical actually never relied or never read the science. And that's stunning to me, because even I had an electrical engineer tell me, Nick, there is not even one single study showing harm from radio frequency radiation. And to be saying that is lazy, because if you go on PubMed and type radio frequency radiation, and then, for example, certain organ systems or oxidative stress, you would find at least that this is a mixed literature. There are studies showing no effects. There are studies showing positive effect, including using microwave for skin treatments, for example, or even for circulation problems. And there's an entire medical side to this story also. But then you would also find that there are many, many negative effects that are possible. And then you can debate over what it means or what the entire literature means. But to say that there's not a single study, to me, is just stunning.
I've done my research. It's like, actually, if you know the process for actually doing solid research, you wouldn't say you've been doing research and you mean YouTubing or Wikipediaing. So for all of those who are skeptical, Nick, why should they trust you?
Well, you know, it's really not about trusting me. What I've been doing since the last 14 years is looking at environmental toxins of many kinds. And there are many kinds of environmental toxins that used to be considered perfectly safe, and then later they were found to be very harmful. An example is asbestos, for example, that we used in everything from, you know, building materials to even in certain toys, if I understand it correctly. And nowadays, we know that asbestos is a class 1 carcinogen, but back when the first workers in certain factories emitted concerns over the fact that I'm getting, you know, lung problems from this asbestos, the medical establishment said these people probably have a psychological issues. And usually, you know, this is not the right reflex to have in 2024, because we saw this happen again and again and again. So this is just an important point that, you know, we have to be open-minded and realize that with many agents that we've introduced in the environment, the dangers were known after they've been rolled out. And my suggestion is, let's look at the data on EMFs and let's look at how the science has been evolving in the last decades, because that's also an important point. It's been evolving in the direction where more and more and more concerns are being emitted on a scientific basis. And at the same time, instead of exposing the population less and less and less, we are exposing them more and more and more. So it makes no sense whatsoever. If someone wants to dive into EMFs and look at the big question, how is it that this technology is being used in a manner that is so ubiquitous these days, and yet there could be danger? So how come, you know, it's not in the media and we're not all screaming from the rooftop about these dangers? And part of it is that the science that we have, the safety, the EMF safety guidelines around the world, this is true in every single country, are based on the wrong assumptions. And one of this assumption is that non-ionizing radiation, so radiation that cannot directly break bonds between molecules, and we know an example of ionizing radiation would be X-rays, for example. We know that this will directly break bonds and this will directly create DNA damage. Therefore, we have to be very prudent, not exposing ourselves to too many of these X-ray scans, for example. And we know that, you know, they should be used sparingly in medical settings. But what people are arguing, and I think this is a complete, almost fabrication at this point by the industry and really pushed by the industry because it comforts people that everything is safe, is that if it's non-ionizing, somehow it's safe. Well, you've mentioned another example of a non-ionizing type of EMF that is harmful in the form of artificial light, right? This light is not ionizing. It is circadian disrupting. It is hormone disrupting. And we know that how it works is that we have sensors on our skin and in our eyes that pick up this light and then get confused over what time of the day is it, and gives people insomnia and also hormonal changes. And it's now also, you know, circadian disruption among night shift workers is a class 2A carcinogen. So that's a pretty strong carcinogenicity classification right there. And we also know now that radio frequency radiation is a class 2B. If we forget about these assumptions that non-ionizing radiation is completely safe and we look at the data, well, the vast majority of studies around radio frequency radiation and DNA damage show negative impacts, show that yes, it can break DNA. And it shows that yes, it can create oxidative stress. This is a mixed literature in the sense that if you expose cells or animals under certain conditions, sometimes they seem to be able to repair the damage, or even in certain conditions, there's no DNA damage. In other conditions, there is. So it is a toxicology that, in fact, it's an agent that is extremely difficult to study, but we can say that at least the assumption that everything is safe is completely wrong.
I mean, I think the health impacts of EMF are, in my opinion, quite risky and quite severe. I'll give you one example. A colleague or friend of mine, he had heard that EMF affects your sleep and messes with your sleep stages. So it can interrupt with your circadian rhythm. Now, for me, if I have the Wi-Fi on or my phone charging on my bedside table, my sleep is ruined. And I track it on my Oura Ring and various other devices as well that I've used at the same time as well as and instead of. When I have the Wi-Fi on, I sleep less. my REM sleep drops probably by 20 to 30%. Sometimes my deep sleep does, but it just depends. And if I turn it off, it's completely fine or much better. The other thing is, so my colleague actually heard this and he raised me. So he actually went and put his router on his bedside table and turned it on and made sure it was downloading or whatever overnight. It didn't affect his sleep at all. And then he turned it off the next night and it didn't affect his sleep at all. Now, what I do find is that people I know that have had high heavy metal levels, specifically or especially mercury, are affected by Wi-Fi or EMF significantly more, myself included. And the more metal I have chelated out of myself over the years using various protocols, the less it has affected me. So it's almost like we are a wired antenna when we have heavy metals in us. So it's actually quite crazy. So I'd love you to, you know, share with the audience what health impacts that are from EMF other than what I've just said.
Sure. Well, I can mention on sleep, some people are, again, very skeptical about how is it that one cell phone or one Wi-Fi router could impact my sleep when in reality I'm exposed by the neighbor's Wi-Fi, and that's not just one Wi-Fi router. It might be 1,000 of them. It might be also 50 different cell phone towers, and I don't know how many phones, you know, hundreds of thousands in London or in Montreal where I live, you know? So how is it that one phone could be impacting me? And they forget about the distance. The closer a device is to your body, the more likely it is to impact it. And that's not always true, but it is generally true that the intensity will make the poison when it comes to radio frequency radiation. And just citing an article from Scientific American back in 2008 that made me very, very angry, and you'll see why in a second, that talked about two different or three different set of studies around putting a phone on the nightstand next to people that are right about going to sleep, and then measuring their brainwaves to see, can a cell phone and the radio frequency radiation it emits impact in a negative manner that person's ability to sleep? And the researchers found effects that were very concerning on a few participants at first. And this was a research from a UK researcher named Horn, H-O-R-N-E. And in that Scientific American article, they talk about the fact that 10 participants had 30 minutes of cell phone exposure. And then there was also certain nights where they had a sham exposure. So no exposure, but the phone looks like it's exposing you, right? You don't know when it's exposing you. And the nights they were in fact exposed to that radiation, they had a sleep onset delay of one additional hour. So they couldn't fall asleep for 1 hour. And maybe they didn't perceive it. It doesn't tell, but what it seems to do is that it will increase your delta waves. So imagine the radio frequency radiation is extremely low, but it is able and it does change the way your brain waves behave. And if it does that, then it can modify your sleep architecture. It can take you up to an hour to go to sleep or actually fall asleep, even though you might perceive that you're kind of, you know, mind wandering or kind of feeling like you're sleeping. You're not, in fact. But the researchers, what they said really made me angry. Horn said, you know, we cannot really conclude from these sets of studies that cell phones are dangerous because the arousal effect that we've seen from the radio frequency radiation was only equivalent to half a cup of coffee. So that's a crazy thing to say, because to me, you know, the determination of whether this makes phones dangerous or not should be done by health agencies. And I think that completely dismissing these results just shows the bias that certain researchers have towards no effect. They say, oh, you know, it's just half a cup of coffee. But we already know that most people don't sleep enough, and most people don't have a quality of sleep that they should have. So if we add half a cup of coffee before bed, isn't it, you know, a public health travesty? I think it is.
So that's really fantastic around sleep for sure, and brainwaves and these things. But I think for the listener, I think it's really important that they understand the negative impacts of EMF exposure on the wider picture, not just on brain health or sleep. So I'm just wondering if you could list them off as you know them.
Sure. The strongest literature is around brain tumors. So that's, again, you know, if you lose sleep, you're not going to die. But if you get a brain tumor, you just might. So the increase in brain tumors has not been quantified, but many researchers think it is closely linked with the increase in glioblastomas, the deadliest form of brain cancer. When you talk with a phone on the ear, and this is a type of ipsilateral brain tumors where they can pinpoint that the exposure was to the right ear, and the brain tumors tend to be on the right side of the head or neck. There are links with parotid gland cancers, glioblastomas. There's also neck cancers such as thyroid cancers that are on the rise. And some researchers think there is a strong link. I said it's a class 2B carcinogen, but many epidemiologists agree that the data have been strong enough for a few years now that we should reclassify radiofrequency radiation as a class 1 carcinogen. But it's not just that. If you put it in other places in your body, there are also findings about the detriments. For example, a phone that you don't place to your head, but instead you put it on in your pocket, has been closely linked with a reduction in fertility in men, and then also a reduction in testosterone.
I've seen this actually quite a lot around testosterone levels, actually. And especially if you've got it in your pocket and you're wearing polyester underwear, because in a study, there's like, if you wear polyester underwear in the study, that it was 100% effective at being making you infertile. So if you pair that with having a phone in your pocket. Now, one thing I just want to jump in with actually is that Apple, apparently I heard recently in their instruction manual, have a thing saying, do not put the phone against your head. If Apple have this in their instructions, they know that they might be open to something, some liability, and therefore they say this, oh, we told you not to put it next to your head in a small print somewhere. you know, and obviously bone reduction as well, you know, from having a phone in your pocket. And I think I once heard Dave Asprey say that he always puts his phone in his combats in his lower leg pocket so that, you know, it the bone density is there opposed to near his balls, which, you know, which is really interesting, you know. And yet when architects and designers build a bridge, they have to make it, I think it's 2, 3, or 4 times stronger so that any vehicles going over don't damage it. Like, that's health and safety. We are over careful. And in the same with, you know, drugs and overdoses, we're over careful with it. However, when it comes to EMF, it's like, nah, it's fine, even though we haven't updated stuff for over 10 years. Doesn't it seem bonkers?
It does, and it is. And, you know, the safety guidelines we have around the world are based from behavioral studies conducted in the 1980s on 5 monkeys and 8 rats. And there's a good paper by a new group called the International Commission on the Biological Effects of EMFs, ICBEEMF. And I highly recommend their paper that talks about scientific evidence invalidates health assumptions underlying the safety standards that we have. So in other words, what they've done in the 1980s is that they put a few rats and a few monkeys in cages, exposed them to radiation, and saw behavioral changes after a certain threshold was reached in intensity. And then they said, okay, well, it looks like the animals are not feeling well. We're going to reduce this or give a few factor of safety there for the public, and we should be fine. But that's not how it should have been. You know, the basic tenets of toxicology have not been applied at all to this. And so therefore, it's not surprising that we can see things, you know, in the paper they talk about reactive oxygen species creation, DNA damage, cardiomyopathy, carcinogenicity, sperm damage, neurological effects, including electromagnetic hypersensitivity, which is, you know, another big rabbit hole to go down towards. But it's linked to a wide variety of different things in science, including in children. We think that some behavioral issues might be aggravated or even created by the exposures that their mom got when she was pregnant. And that's an angle that I rarely talk about, but I was just reviewing it before recording this interview. And, you know, researchers at UCLA found that children of mothers who use cell phones most frequently during pregnancy had a 2-fold increase in behavioral and emotional problems and hyperactivity in their children by the time that they reached school age. And the main researcher here is not anyone, it's Dr. Hugh Taylor at Yale. So You know, he said, when you combine the data from animal studies and then the epidemiology we have, he says, this is clearly cause and effect. When you use a phone during pregnancy, your children will be that much more likely to have behavioral issues. So what does that tell us about how it might impact the brain that is forming? This is quite dramatic, right? So you wanted me to get into the dramatic stuff, brain tumors and how it impacts children, and then fertility. We have a crisis worldwide in the Western nations where even healthy couples that don't seem to have any diagnostic or, you know, anything you can diagnose them still have a hard time conceiving. Sometimes it's the, you know, the fault of the woman's biology, and sometimes it's the man's biology. But we cannot discount that cell phones in the pocket or a laptop or any exposure that we're having has such a profound effect on our ability to be fertile that, you know, it is something that is threatening to the species long term, along with, of course, plastics and different chemicals. But it is to be noted, again, and it's not to just name drop, but to tell people that many scientists who used to think this topic was not credible have turned around in the last years. One of them is Dr. Andrew Huberman from Stanford. You know, he reviewed the data in early 2023, and I reported on this, and I think you also did. And he said, you know, the data on cell phones in the pocket being an endocrine disruptor. So endocrine means, you know, hormonal disruption, reduction in fertility, reduction in testosterone. He said that this data around phones is in fact more credible and more convincing than BPA.
He actually said, his words were, the science is very clear on this, were Andrew's yeah. words.
Remember, if you want to learn how to take control of your health and you're sick of traditional healthcare and temporary fixes, you should come to the Health Optimization Summit. You can join other like-minded enthusiasts and meet the world's leading minds in health, wellness, and science. You can even test out a load of groundbreaking health tech and latest supplements. Get your tickets at healthoptimization.com.
What does our smartphone Wi-Fi router, as we say in English, or router in American, and our microwave oven have in common, Nick?
Well, they each emit this radio frequency radiation, and part of it is the microwave a spectrum of frequency. So yes, your phone is a type of, you know, low-level microwave oven, around, you know, 2 watts rather than 1200 watts, that being said. So it's not like it can cook you, although it is not the thermal effects that we should be interested in. It is the athermal effect, the non-thermal effects, because it turns out that if your phone is at just, you know, this 2 watts of power, a lot of people concluded where, well, therefore, you know, it cannot cook you and it's safe. Well, even if you don't feel the heat, you can still get oxidative damage. And in fact, this effect is found at levels that are infinitely smaller than cell phone exposure. So we see effects in biology, for example, in insects or bacteria at levels that are extremely small. You know, one cell phone tower at several kilometers away could be enough to create some kind of effect in biological beings. So it turns out that our sensitivity to this radiation is much, much, much higher than expected. And one researcher, Dr. Paul Hiru, who is a top researcher on the topic and who gives a course to his students at the McGill University in Montreal, says that a change of 2% in mitochondrial voltage is enough to have a cell have to adapt to this change in the electrical environment. But he said something very surprising. I just reviewed a video last week, and he said that this adaptation to this new voltage that is sensed by the cell will take 3 to 4 weeks. The adaptation takes 3 to 4 weeks. And then if there's another change of plus or minus 2% in voltage, then the cells have to adapt again. But the point is this, we're all exposed to an environment that is constantly changing, where these external forces are always there and change from second to second. So therefore, there's a strong argument in his research that we're never going to fully adapt to this outside assault from these EMFs because we're constantly needing to adapt. And what it creates is really that in the end, it will create a decrease in our ability to produce energy. So it's literally, you know, if you want to put it quite simply, it's draining our batteries. And when you get people to reduce their exposure, many people report better sleep and better energy. And I don't feel as exhausted at the end of my workday. For example, if I work on an Ethernet cable instead of Wi-Fi.
I've had so many followers say that they've lost their headache since they cut out their Bluetooth headphones. And that's not a coincidence, I don't think, because the numbers I've had are in the hundreds quite easily, you know, and I've only got a smallish audience. So it's just, it's quite crazy to think that, you know, we haven't got more awareness around this or that the awareness is being hidden. But I guess that's where, you know, companies and their profits are kind of like, have the money to be able to make sure that this isn't quite so out there. So is it true that mobile phones can damage the blood-brain barrier?
The evidence is very clear that it does, that it makes the blood-brain barrier more porous. But even to this day, this line of research has not been funded properly. And I don't see any, you know, big entity out there rushing to fund this because, you know, even the US government this year stopped all EMF studies. The last line of funding that they had for the National Toxicology Program ran dry and they said, oh, we don't have enough resources. So it's not a topic that is popular to fund and to study. In fact, the more health effects have been found between radiofrequency radiation and, you know, negative effects, the more this evidence has grown, the less funding has become available to scientists. And I think this is really why the blood-brain barrier story has not been studied more. But even lately, I saw discussions among these scientists. And for them, it's clear that the effect is there, but they still don't know to this day what is the significance of this. Some hypothesize that, you know, if you have a blood-brain barrier that is more porous, you would have more heavy metals or other toxicants in the environment that could enter the brain. So therefore, there could be a link with neurodegenerative diseases, including Alzheimer's or dementia. And there are also good epidemiology on that side, but it's still early and it's very hard to pinpoint, you know, that this is causal. But one thing is sure, if you put anything Bluetooth to your head, you're essentially replacing the phone that we think is increasing glioblastoma with a newer type of exposure that is less studied. So therefore, in my mind, it's even riskier because we don't have the data. So therefore, it could be even worse, but it is deeper into the brain. And we also know that the blood-brain barrier disruption can happen at levels that are much, much, much lower than cell phone radiation. We're talking about thousands or sometimes tens of thousands of times lower in intensity was sufficient to breach the blood-brain barrier. So I know this is something that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. mentioned on Joe Rogan, and he seemed to be freaking out about it. Oh my God, we have to turn off the Wi-Fi. Well, I don't know if we do need to do that, but that's one line of evidence that is extremely, extremely concerning. But one thing that has been mentioned also years ago is that the blood-brain barrier is just one of the body's barriers that are very fragile, right? There's also the gut barrier, there's the testicular barrier, and the barrier of many organs could be in the same situation from these cell phones also.
Yeah. I mean, especially if you have it on your inside pocket, like for instance, the rate of breast cancer when women are putting it in their bras and, you know, working yes. out. But so what happens when we do cut out EMFs? Like what health benefits do we see and how quickly do we see them?
For some people, they sleep better after a few nights. And, you know, it's not like there are large cohort studies showing, you know, improvements in sleep, but I also connect with a lot of doctors. A lot of doctors are not waiting for the data to come out. They're just telling their patients, try this experiment. Turn off your phone or put it on airplane mode and turn off the Wi-Fi. Many, many people are starting to sleep better. So it looks like just these steps alone, without, you know, trying to shield yourself completely or going completely crazy with the mitigation strategies that could be feasible, but just doing the very basics, just turning off what is in your bedroom is sufficient for some people to sleep better after a few nights.
So some of them, so some of these things are noticed quite quickly. But I mean, what would you say the main benefits of cutting Wi-Fi out or EMFs, you know, or cutting it down, do you think that there are, other than the sleep? I mean, do you notice, obviously I've seen the headache, the link to headaches and migraines go very quickly, but is there anything else that you think that is particularly stands out?
Well, I think energy production could go up over time. You know, we have studies where the more people are exposed, the more their antioxidant reserve starts going down. So in the end, I think it can be any body system that becomes better over time when you decrease exposure, but it's hard to pinpoint one thing. One thing is sure, we have a fraction of the population that could fall under the spectrum of electrosensitivity. And a lot of people who are electrosensitive, just like, you know, a lot of people who are celiac, they don't know that they have this condition. So when they start reducing exposure, they might just discover that their health is completely transformed. And that's true for certain people. I've heard, anecdotally speaking, I've seen people be able to overcome certain condition, hypothyroidism, headaches that you mentioned, even skin conditions that they had before now gets better. So is it because their sleep is better, therefore their healing abilities have become better? Well, we don't know exactly why it is the case, but when you turn off sources, you're trying to go back to a normal EMF environment. You know, something that our grandparents had access to de facto, now it's becoming difficult to have a normal environment. So I think that, you know, on many levels, just being smart about it and starting to reduce exposure, regardless of any symptoms you might feel or not feel, it's just a smart thing to do with the data we have.
So it sounds like Darren Orland talks about his fatal conveniences. I mean, it's bloody brilliant. It helps us have a better connected life. Although it's quite addictive, it is a fatal convenience. So EMFs seem impossible to get away from. Can we avoid them without ditching all of the technologies and going off grid and living like a hermit?
I think so. I think it's just a change of habits is really the first thing to do. For example, before you go to bed or before you put your phone in your pocket, you put it on airplane mode. At first, it's something a little bit annoying and maybe you have to think about it. But in the case of my wife, when she got pregnant, you know, she had a hard time remembering it. And I had to tell her, watch out, put it on airplane mode if you have it in your pocket, because there's a, you know, our baby is growing and we know these risks. And she wanted to learn and to develop this habit. And within a few weeks, it became the new normal for her. So it's really, yes, you can still live with technology, but you can use technologies that are much safer. For example, wiring up your devices, or including your computer, with an Ethernet cable is a way to still be on the internet like I do back at my home office and not have the radiation.
Interesting. I mean, I agree. And I mean, one of the things that you mentioned earlier on that a lot of people say is like, well, I live in an apartment, I've got 50 or 100 Wi-Fi, you know, signals around me. So why should I turn mine off? Well, number one is it doesn't go through walls too well, although you do get signal, it never works as well. Also, if you don't start with yourself, where are you going to start? So it's like you want to reduce impact. You don't want to just say, oh, well, yeah, mine's one of 50, so I'm not going to do anything about it. It's like your one is probably as strong as 15 others. So why would you not, why would you not want to reduce it somehow, you know, and charge your phone in another room and have it on airplane mode and have the Wi-Fi turned off. And if you've got Sonos sound system, get remote control plugs from Amazon. So you've got one button to turn them on, off and off, on and off around the whole house in one go. So, I mean, set yourself up to succeed. And I mean, I have a remote control on my bedside table that is linked to every plug around the house where there's a Wi-Fi device linked to it. Because I do use Wi-Fi, but I don't use it all the time. It's like after I've done my morning routine and sat on the sofa and done blah, 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 I then switch on the Wi-Fi, which then means I can use the laptop if I'm actually sitting on the sofa. And then obviously at my standing desk, it's wired in, so the Wi-Fi goes off. So, I mean, those are just some of the ideas that I implemented to make my home more anti-EMF. I've also got anti-EMF paint actually in my bedroom, which is actually grounded out. Now, there is some people say that actually you can be in a Wi-Fi hotbox if you have Wi-Fi on in the house and you have, you know, metal painted walls, basically. But I found that to be fantastic for my room, and pretty much no signal gets in at all. So I'm quite happy with that as well. Are there any other anti-EMF things that you can think of that are worth implementing?
I think, you know, these days we should refocus on the wires on headphones. And that's just unfortunate, but it's not my favorite thing to do. I don't like the fact that these are getting tangled like everyone else. However, the risks of Bluetooth in my mind are just not worth it. So I'm going to invite people to, you know, sell whatever Bluetooth new sexy headphones they have and buy, if you're an audiophile and you want this sound quality, there are still a few models of very expensive headphones that you can have that have a wire, and focus on those, because I think a lot of people are going to be sorry for themselves in a few decades down the road when they use Bluetooth for extended periods of time.
Well, something interesting that you've just made me think of actually is, ever since I was about 19, I guess, when I had my phone, so we're looking, you know, 29, 30, 25, 26 years. I used to always hold my phone and put it on my shoulder, between my cheekbone and my shoulder, and be on the phone for hours. I know, like, for instance, talking to my girlfriend and late at night, lying in bed with it on my shoulder, or walking around, you know, at the time when I smoked, walking around with a cigarette in my mouth and the phone squeezed between my head. It was always this side of my body, so my left side of the body. Where have I had the most bone degeneration in my jaw and the most dental issues and infections and root canals and, you know, implants? Always exactly here, always exactly the same problem. And in fact, you can see my beard here has actually gone gray in one patch, which is where I had all the dental issues. This is why I know people like Dr. Dom Nitschwitz and all the biological dentist guys, because I've had so many issues. And I actually, you know, I have no proof about this, but I do know that my little Nokia 8810 used to get so hot, like boiling hot against my ear and my cheekbone. And that is where I've had all my issues. Not this side. I never use the other side. So it just seems bonkers. But anyway, one thing that's really important to me is traveling. And I go to a lot of events. I speak at events and I'm traveling around the world as much as possible, trying to get as much sunlight, you know, safely as I can, because my body loves it. So when people are traveling and staying in hotels, how do we avoid EMFs other than ripping the Wi-Fi router off the ceiling, which I've done in several hotels and got in trouble for it, so that you haven't got Wi-Fi at the end of your bed or under it. What do you think?
I always bring an EMF detector with me. One that I like is called the CEM Protect 33. It's made in France, and it's a very good model to just detect different sources all at once. You have different types of signals that you can detect, and also the sound feature. So why I bring it to hotel rooms is that oftentimes there are certain things in the hotel room that they will install and you don't realize is emitting a signal. A good example is the alarm clock. There's a Bluetooth sign on there. It means, generally speaking, that the Bluetooth is always on. So you can unplug these things at night, and at least you're trying to mitigate the environment as best as you can. And like I say to a lot of people, if you're traveling from time to time, well, be more worried about how you're mitigating your home rather than how you're mitigating your travels, right? If you travel all the time, that's another story, but really focus on where you're actually spending time. And if you're spending quite a lot of time in hotel rooms, well, make sure to bring the EMF detector with you and to mitigate it as best as you can.
Mm. I mean, I unplug the TV, I unplug or take off the Wi-Fi router, and sometimes you can't unplug it unless you actually take it off of the ceiling itself, which once upon a time I had to go and buy double-sided sticky tape to stick it back up on the ceiling because I got in trouble before. So, but it worked for me. I mean, in a couple of hotels I stayed at, I didn't test for EMFs, although I had my reader with me, and I just couldn't sleep. I was semi-awake all night. And then when I tested for EMF the next day, it was off the charts. And in fact, when I went outside, and it was like almost like a posh cabin, I guess it would be called. When I looked outside, the electricity for the whole row of cabins was coming in within a foot of my bedhead. So, you know, I mean, I'm super careful now. Super, super careful. So are there any supplements that can help us fend off some of the negative impacts of EMFs?
Yeah, there is not a lot of research that would show us what is the pill you can take to protect yourself against EMFs. However, there is nutritional support that I think is a decent idea. One of it is magnesium, making sure that magnesium levels are high. There is good reasons to think that this would help at least, you know, somehow reduce or minimize the biological effects of EMFs. And a lot of people are magnesium deficient in particular, and I think that they are that much more prone to getting oxidative damage from EMFs if they don't have the proper mineral levels. That could hold true for other minerals as well. So I think looking at nutritional status and making sure you don't have these vitamins or mineral deficiencies is one thing. I'll also mention something else that isn't, you know, a mineral or a supplement, but going barefoot on the earth, this act of earthing seems to have, let's say, a regulatory effect on your body where it will bring your bioelectrical sensors back to normal. So it looks like for people that have these sensitivities and can really feel unwell from these exposures, if they start earthing regularly, it helps them bring things back to baseline.
Actually, it's a really, really fantastic point because, as you know, many of my listeners and followers will know, I love grounding. I feel fantastic from it. And I have actually personally tested before and after grounding and looked at my red blood cells and under a dark field microscope, and they're clumped together. And afterwards, they're not. They're equidistant and correct. And, you know, when I have used an EMF, a multimeter to test my body voltage, it's obviously high. When I'm in a house with Wi-Fi on, it's slightly lower when the Wi-Fi is off. But when I'm grounded, and if that's with a earthing bed sheet or putting my foot on the soil in the garden, my body voltage goes to 0.00. And so, you know, you're seeing how we're creating, let's say, static electricity almost, or increasing our body voltage when we're not grounded. And, you know, we evolved being barefoot, walking on ground and rock, and not being on a bed that's completely insulated with, you know, EMF bouncing around our heads. So no wonder it's having an impact on us. So I recommend anyone, you know, to get an earthing bed sheet. Make sure you get a dirty electricity filter to go on the walls, though. If the electricity is contaminated in some way, you'll get around that issue. I have and this isn't a plug, by the way, I just love it, a Samina bed sleep system, they call it, which is earthed out with all natural fibers, no metals, no glues or anything like that. And it's slightly raised head, so it helps your brain drain overnight and your digestive system. And my sleep's actually 20%, nearly 20% better on it. And that's got grounding with dirty electricity filters built into it. So, you know, I urge you guys to go and check out Samina or grounding bed sheets, and Amazon have some, you know, fairly good value ones. So you're hosting the 2024 EMF Hazard Summit. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about it?
Sure. So this is an annual summit I've been putting together for now the third consecutive year. And it features many thinkers, attorneys, EMF scientists, EMF-aware doctors on the topic of electrosensitivity in particular. We talk about the science, but also how to figure out if you have these sensitivities and you might be more impacted than you thought from all these different man-made EMF exposures. We have a presidential candidate in the US, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., and we have also top environmental medicine doctors that have successfully help their patients recover from their sensitivities. So it gives, you know, it gave me a lot of hope to record these new 20 interviews that will be presented from April 11 to 14th. And I hope that for people that do not feel well and know they are electrosensitive, it's going to give them a lot of relief and a lot of new actionable tips they can use.
Amazing. So obviously we're going to have in the show notes, but do you want to tell us where they can find you?
Sure. At emfhazards.com.
Perfect. Nick, thank you for joining me on the show. Thank you for sharing your knowledge around EMF. Very happy to have caught up with you. Thank you, mate.
Thank you so much, Tim.
A massive thank you to my guest, Nick Pino. Learn more about Nick and the dangers of EMF at theemfguy.com. You've been listening to the Health Optimization Podcast, and I'm Tim Gray. Comment and leave the video a thumbs up if you enjoyed it, and subscribe to my channel to see more. See you next time, and remember, let's spread the health.